We'll send you a free copy of the new Christmas Archbook, O Bethlehem. All you have to do is leave your answer to the question, Issues Etc., What Does This Mean?, on the Issues Etc. comment line before Friday, November 20th, 618-223-8382. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. 618-223-8382. Issues Etc., What Does This Mean? 618-223-8382. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We have been hearing a lot about diversity on the college and university campus, a lot of demands for more of it. Now, what if it were the case that someone could tick off all the box when it comes to what's required to be considered a person who qualifies as diverse, but their politics, their moral beliefs didn't go along with the diversity movement? Would they qualify as well? We're going to talk about the new tolerance on campus. Joining us on this Wednesday afternoon, Dr. Robert Oscar Lopez. He's Associate Professor of English and Classics at Cal State Northridge in Los Angeles and founder of the International Children's Rights Institute. He's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Racism Isn't the Problem on Campus, Gender Insanity Is. Dr. Lopez, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much for having me on. And I should say I don't speak on behalf of the university.
What we're calling the atmosphere of new tolerance on college and university campuses, has it benefited you?
Not at all. The new tolerance basically has generated this, what I would call a shadow legal system that exists only on university campuses, where these diversity officers can conduct investigations that have huge impact and can inflict huge damage on people, either students or staff at universities, and they don't have to follow any of the guidelines of the Constitution or any kind of established due process. So it's actually quite dangerous what's going on right now.
So tell us your story. I mean, how you fit within, or where you should fit within the atmosphere of new tolerance, but where you end up actually fitting when it comes to this enforced diversity.
Well, I basically fit in all of their boxes of oppression. You know, my mother was a lesbian. She raised me from my toddler years until her death when I was a teenager with her lesbian partner. So they were in a stable lesbian relationship. I am half Puerto Rican and half Filipino, and then my mother's partner was a white lesbian. So I inherited basically all of the minority groups you can possibly imagine. I myself came out as bisexual when I was a teenager, and now I am married to a woman, and I'm faithfully in a relationship with her, and I'm also a veteran. But none of those things seem to really matter, because I believe that children have a right to be raised by their mother and father first and foremost, and that negates everything. Even though I would satisfy a lot of these student demands for diverse faculty, I don't see anybody from that camp, that leftist protest camp, coming to my defense, when really what is going on at Cal State Northridge is I'm being driven out. I'm one of very few Latino professors outside of the ethnic studies department, and I'm you know, being driven out by accusations that I'm discriminating against people, and the accusations are full of falsehoods. So it's really very scary.
How did you become the target of this kind of move to diversity?
I used my research in the field of English to try to approach the question of gay marriage and gay parenting from a different angle. I believed that the social sciences could not really answer the question of whether this was going to be good for children. I said that you had to look at thousands of years of literature and really draw from that a sense of what it means to have a mother and father aside from just statistics. And so because of that approach, I really came under massive attack from a lot of people who had a vested interest in getting gay marriage passed and in covering up the downside of gay parenting. So because of that, I've really been targeted really since 2012, but most specifically since GLAAD put me on their blacklist in 2013, and then the Human Rights Campaign put me on their blacklist in 2014.
So despite the fact that you, as you say, tick all the diversity boxes that one person possibly could, I can't think of any other way that you could realistically do more in that sense. Your politics are wrong. Your moral views are wrong. Is that how it comes down?
Yeah, and you don't matter. I mean, if your politics are wrong, you literally just don't count. They won't help you. They won't defend you. They will side with the people who are attacking you. you know, in this case, a lot of the people who were filing these complaints were white heterosexual women. And nobody's really jumping to the defense of me. So I think it really makes me question or even reject the whole premise of the student protests that are going on. I just don't think that they're doing this in good faith. I think that there's a broader agenda of trying to give more extraordinary bureaucratic powers to the administrators at these universities.
What does all of this tell you about kind of the diversity movement in general, but in particular, in your case, the LGBT/feminist agenda? What does it tell you?
I think that they're just interested in power, and I think that they're a lot of them are just, I think they've been brainwashed, essentially, and they're not really contributing towards any kind of end goal that's going to be more just or that will be more harmonious or that will be beneficial to people. It's clear that they want something, they want changes, and they want to have more control over the system, but they haven't really made the case that what they're going to produce is any better than what they're complaining about. And in fact, most of the evidence seems to point to the fact that it's going to be a lot worse. Essentially, if my case is an example of what will happen across the country, it means the end of the Constitution, because you're not going to have free speech and you're not going to have due process or equal protection under the law. There's going to be a whole other bureaucracy supposedly to advance gender equality that will be able to spy on you and get you fired and even get you thrown in jail. And you're not going to have really the right to contest it because the Constitution has been put on hold.
Now, someone says, well, yeah, because the hotbed of these movements is on the college and university campus, but the average person working an average job who isn't in the, you know, the heated pressure cooker of political correctness that is the academy, he's not going to feel the heat from this. What do you say?
No, I think that's not true at all. I think that this is really, the colleges are the place where they have the institutional structure to be able to put into place what they're going to impose on the whole country. And I think this is coming to a workplace very near you. You're going to start finding that maybe your employer will say you have free speech when you're on the job, but you'll be open to complaints, no matter how frivolous they are, from anyone who's LGBT, who's within earshot of you, if they hear you say anything that they don't like, even if you didn't intend it, even if they heard it incorrectly. What really matters is what they feel in response to you, and that can be used to discipline you. So this is going to come to everywhere in the country, especially because they're pushing the Equality Act at the federal level, which is basically what I went through, but nationalized.
What was your reaction when you watched, over the last couple of weeks, the protests from both Mizzou and Yale University?
I tried really hard to understand where everybody was coming from, because I can understand, as someone who was a racial minority who went through a very white environment, I'm a Yale graduate, so I can understand the frustration when you feel that things are stacked against you and you feel like the institution doesn't understand where you're coming from. So I tried really hard to understand that, but I just couldn't countenance anything that they're doing. I feel that they are being unethical, because I don't think that a lot of these incidents that they're claiming are bona fide true incidents. I think a lot of them are hoaxes. A lot of them are exaggerations or overreactions. And I just don't think it's ever justifiable to scream at people when you could just sit down and try to work through your differences with them. So my reaction has been a great deal of anxiety and sadness about how these movements, which I support on some level. I mean, I think that you should treat people justly, and I don't think that you should discriminate against people based on who they are. But it's just sad that a movement based on something which I can justify has turned into something so unjustifiable, indefensible, really.
Where did it go wrong between the proper understanding of justice, equality, non-discrimination, and what we're seeing, which is this kind of toxic, irrational discrimination in the name of non-discrimination?
I think it went wrong because of a certain arrogance and a lack of understanding of history, because we've been through this many times before. I teach my students about the Puritans, for instance, who in 1630 said that they were going to found a community based on love, and then 50 years later they had the witch trials. It's very common in history for people, when they think that they've figured it out and everyone who came before was wrong, and then you're going to set up a new set of rules for yourself, you create, you know, Chairman Mao, you create the Stalinist show trials, you create the Star Chamber. You know, that I think that it went wrong here because what began as a movement that was based on love just simply got arrogant, and they thought that they had enough confidence in their own mental sharpness that they thought that whatever they set up was going to work, and it was going to work well, and it was going to serve a common good, and they just couldn't see their own flaws. They couldn't see where they were going wrong, and they threw out the Constitution, and they threw out all of the history that could have given them a warning sign about when things were going wrong. I think it's a basic human flaw, and we're just seeing it repeat itself after many times in history.
You have observed that on the subject of shamelessness, and I quote you, you say the most shameless players in the ongoing campus diversity tragedy end up prevailing. What do you mean by that?
I mean that it seems that one of the tactics that they use is they just behave in ways that stun people. It staggers you. You don't know how to respond. You're left speechless. And then they just advance when you're in that state of shock. That seems to be a tried and true method of the LGBT and feminist movement. And so, you know, you have the young student, the African-American student at Yale, screaming at the top of her lungs in the face of this professor because his wife sent an email about Halloween costumes. And you can see in the video, he just doesn't know how to react. And so that goads her on even more. And then in the end, he ended up apologizing to her when she should have apologized to him. It's almost like the total disregard for any kind of shared understanding of proper etiquette and good manners between people has become a means of advancing the agenda. And the more shameless you are, I think, the more intimidating you are, and so you get your way. And that's a terrible way to go about a movement. It's guaranteed to lead this into a very ugly place, I think.
Do you see any mechanism that can check this, either on the university campus or in society, in greater society? You mentioned, of course, the Constitution, but when no one's paying attention to that one, it hardly serves as a check. Right. But is there any mechanism in society that can check this besides common sense?
Well, I do think that the Republicans have control of both houses of Congress, and they need to start using the power of the purse. All of this is being financed through federal money. And unfortunately, I had somewhat, you know, of good hopes for Obama when he took office, but it's clear that he is captive to these special interest groups, and the Office of Civil Rights is not going to, you know, provide civil liberties and constitutional rights to people. So I think the Republicans have got to really make some bold moves here, and they have to make institutions like universities start to feel worried that they might lose federal funding or tax-exempt status if they have procedures on their campus or if they engage in investigations or things that are clearly unconstitutional. So I think that's the only step that I can think of right now that is proactive and that is feasible. You know, if you cut off the money, a lot of these universities are going to have to change. If you keep on just throwing the money at them through the federally backed student loans and through the tax exemptions and through, you know, the federal subsidies, then they're not going to change. They're going to keep on doing this, and they're going to keep on setting up more and more diversity offices that are just going to encourage students to act like spies and to be saboteurs, et cetera. So I think it's got to come at the federal level, and it has to deal with money, I think.
You, where you went afoul of the diversity office is, despite all of your diversity bona fides, where you went afoul of them, as you said before, was insisting that children have the right to be raised by their father and mother. Make that case for us now.
If you look at American history, which I have studied in great depth, and you look at the history of slavery and the history of what happened to Native Americans, it's clear that people's heritage, their paternal and their maternal lineage, really matters, and that when you take that away from people and you turn children into products that other people can buy because they just want a child in their home to love them, you end up creating tremendous injustice, and we don't want to repeat that injustice. I think we can't prove it through statistics, but we can prove it by looking at human nature and human history and all of the art that has been left behind before, that people long to be connected to their mother and father, and that's a basic human right, and we need to respect that, if that makes sense.
Dr. Robert Oscar Lopez is Associate Professor of English and Classics at Cal State Northridge in Los Angeles, founder of the International Children's Rights Institute, and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Racism Isn't the Problem on Campus, Gender Insanity It Is. You will find a link to both International Children's Rights Institute and The Federalist at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Lopez, thank you very much for your time. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, sir.
You know, this is not going away anytime soon. There's no doubt about that. The kind of political correctness or the diversity enforcement that we have seen on display over the last few weeks at big universities is just the air that many of our students breathe when they go off to college and university. It may be noxious air, but they still have to learn to live in that atmosphere and to give bold witness and confession of Christ in the same atmosphere, as unpopular as that will inevitably prove to be. A great help to your child, your grandchild, who's out off there at the university campus facing this is LCMSU. They connect your children and your grandchildren with reliable confessional Lutheran pastors, congregations, and resources. Find out more about LCMSU on the web, lcms.org/LCMSU, lcms.org/LCMSU. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll find Christ in Daniel chapter 7. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
The third commandment teaches us to remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. We do this when we hold God's word sacred and gladly hear and learn it. Jesus invites the weak and heavy laden to rest in him, our true rest, because his yoke is easy and his burden is light. This weekend, rest in Jesus as you hear his word and receive his gifts. If you are in Southern Illinois, you're invited to join Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstatt to rest in the grace of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Learn more at trinitymillstatt.org.